Welcome to the Sermon Podcast from Beaver Parish Church.
There was a little phrase at the end of the Gospel reading today that says, "But Jesus' mother treasured all these things in her heart." Now, in the story of the life of Jesus, we've begun in our Bible readings back at Christmas. We've started to work our way through all the Christmas stories, the nativity stories. And today, to fit it all into, from Christmas to Easter, all of the life of Jesus, you do have to jump. So today we read the story of Jesus as a 12-year-old when he went up to the temple for that festival. But the thing that was that wee phrase is at the end of that story. Remember, Mary and Joseph had to come looking for Jesus. And he said this strange thing about, "Do you not know I need to be in my father's house or about my father's business?" And then they went back to Nazareth. But it's when back in Nazareth that we have this little comment. "But his mother treasured all these things in her heart." Now, I think it's important for us to realize that that wasn't something that Mary said. That was something that Luke, who wrote that gospel, commented. Now, if you go back to the start of Luke's gospel, you discover why he's writing that story. And Luke wasn't one of the disciples. He wasn't in the 12, where we never even hear of him as being in the crowds or anything like that. We do hear of him later on as being one of the people who accompanied St. Paul on his missionary journeys. But up until that point, we don't hear much about him. But except that there's something of the writing of this story, because he writes the Gospel of Luke, the story of Jesus, right through to the resurrection. And then he goes on to write a second book called The Acts of the Apostles, where he tells the stories of Peter and Paul and the first Christians and the spread of the gospel out into Europe and everything. And he does this, well, let me say what he says. And this is right at the beginning of Luke chapter 1. "Many have undertaken to draw up an account of these of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught." Luke was probably writing a couple of decades after the death of Jesus, right? So we're not talking about somebody who is scribbling it down as it goes along. This is somebody, and as he says, he has carefully investigated everything, and he has listened to people, he has talked to eyewitnesses and to everyone else, and he's writing down an orderly account of what happened so that we may believe the certainty of these things. And that in some ways makes him an historian. He's writing the story for us. Now, when he gets to this point, "But Jesus' mother treasured all these things in her heart." That's almost the very last phrase before the story leaps nearly 20 years to Jesus' baptism as a 30-year-old. This is like the end story of the beginning. And therefore, when I think Luke writes in this little phrase, "Mary treasured all these things in her heart," I think Luke is making a comment about everything that has happened so far. So what has happened so far? Her cousin Elizabeth, way beyond childbearing age, is pregnant, miraculously. Her husband, Zechariah, and these are the parents of John the Baptist, her husband Zechariah struck dumb. Can't say anything about what's happening. Can't speak any longer. And it seems he indicates it's a God thing. It's not an illness or anything. That something has happened to him. She has been approached by an archangel and told she's going to have a baby. And the baby's going to be the Son of God. Her husband-to-be, who isn't part of this pregnancy at all, has also been spoken to in a dream about who this child will be. They've had to go off to Bethlehem. The birth of this child happens strangely in a stable or a shed at the back of an inn. Shepherds turn up with stories about angels. Epiphany that we just passed. The Magi, these strange people who aren't of the Jewish culture and faith at all, who turn up, perhaps on camels, from somewhere far in the east, and have turned up with these gifts that aren't nappies and food and things. They're very precious, but they're also symbolic and prophetic. Yeah, these things have all been happening. They've had to flee to Egypt because Herod suddenly decides to try to wipe out this baby and slaughters a very young generation of children around Bethlehem. A horrendous genocide to be happening among Herod's own people, by Herod's own people. And they end up as refugees in Egypt. Now they've come back, Herod has died. Again, another angel visitation has told them it's safe to come back. They're back living where they started off, in Nazareth. And as there's their custom, as many people's custom, they go up to Jerusalem to this festival. And they end up there, and they lose the Son of God. Now, if you're going to lose any child, that one wouldn't be the one to lose, I'm thinking. And as well as losing this child, are they beginning to think something of God's plan is unfolding? Because they know something about this child that hardly anyone else knows about. I'm assuming Elizabeth and now John the Baptist, who's also 12 by this stage. And well, it would have been John at that stage, not John the Baptist. And his dad, who can now speak again. I'm guessing these people share these stories with each other and talk about it, maybe pray about it and wonder what it is, and search the Old Testament scriptures to find verses about it and what on earth is happening. Then they come back and they find the little boy sitting with all the grown-up teachers and scholars discussing the things about the kingdom and the Messiah and everything, and people are amazed at him. And when they grab him by the ear or whatever and pull him off and say, "You mustn't go running off on us," he says, "Do you not know I need to be about my Father's business?" Now, I'm sure a big light dawns in Mary's head. And she realizes, you're right. Of course there's another agenda and timetable running in your life that isn't the same as all the other children in Nazareth. Now, how does Luke know these stories? I think he had to talk to Mary, or he had to talk to some of the other family, because we're told that Mary then had other children, or at least Jesus had other brothers and sisters. We're told that there were other people around, but whatever, Luke assures us that he has investigated the whole thing, and he writes this comment: Mary treasured all these things. Treasured is more than just remembered. Treasured is enfolds your arms around these things. Treats them as valuable. Keeps them safe. Perhaps even, and we're talking not exactly, gets them out and polishes them. Wonders about these things. And I think it's all of the story that has happened up to this point. Now, I want just to pick out a few wee things out of that story that I think could be helpful for us. The story for Mary, at least this bit of the story, begins with a God moment, when she finds herself in interaction with an archangel who says that you're going to be the mother of the Son of God. And of course Mary's reaction is, "Let it be to me according to your word." Now, all of us, Mary's journey is both physical and spiritual. And all of us, whether we journey physically or not, we are journeying spiritually. All of us are on a journey that has already begun. We were talking about this on Tuesday night, and I haven't asked permission. Andy, can I tell a wee bit of your story about the boat in the harbour? Would that be okay? Thank you. And if I get this all wrong, Andy will fill you in with the... So very briefly, we were talking about God moments in our lives. And Andy came up with a God moment in his life that, as he looks back, he can see it's a God moment, but it was sort of before he was really aware of God. Certainly before he became a Christian and a follower of Jesus. And I don't know if you know about Andy, but Andy's a boat person. He rows competitively. Still, yeah. Shouldn't have said still. He's obviously a young man. he rows competitively and has done, but also likes to sail and has sailed for many, many years. And he had a boat parked, that's probably the wrong word, moored in Carrickfergus. And a number of years ago, decided on a Sunday afternoon, and I'm adding this bit to get away from the children or whatever, decided to go down to a wee bit of work on the yacht. Went down to the boat in Carrickfergus, rowed out in the wee, whatever wee boat you row out, to get to a boat that's moored out in the harbour, got onto the boat and was doing a wee bit of work and didn't notice the time passing. And when he went to get off the boat, realised the tide had gone out and the boat was now surrounded in mud and you couldn't walk in it because it was sticky and deep and everything else, so he had to spend a few more hours on the boat on a Sunday afternoon. Now, do any of you know what happens on a good day in Carrickfergus Harbour on a Sunday afternoon? The drive-in church. Have you seen this? A lorry pulls in, they put up sound systems, they get singers up, and somebody preaches, and people drive in their cars in the car park and they sit. So what's Andy got to do? The only thing he can do is sit on his boat and watch and listen. Yeah. And now looks back and can see a God moment when he wasn't expecting it. Mary had a similar God moment. I want to invite you at the start of this New Year journey to consider, to ponder like Mary, backwards, and think of the God moments in your life. And particularly what effect they've had on you. And are they still having effect on you? Mary never went back. From that moment with the archangel, it started her on a journey and she never went back. She didn't stop. It propelled her through her life. That was her God moment. And she was set off on a journey that would take her forever. Second thing, as a result of her God moment, Mary had to do something, right? She wasn't pregnant. Well, she was pregnant for very close to 9 months when she suddenly realized that to fulfill this journey, she was going to have to do something. And she didn't know how much this was going to cost her. But because her husband-to-be was Joseph, and a new law had been passed that families had to register back in the hometown of the man of the family, she ended up in Bethlehem. Now, that was never part of her plan. But because of this God moment, something has to change. And she ends up very late in pregnancy, traveling all the way to Bethlehem, finding herself in horrendous conditions, giving birth to the Son of God. And she has no idea where this new plan is going to take her. She certainly never imagined it was going to take her to Egypt. But she recognized that when there are God moments in our lives, they're very often followed up with something to do, something that has to happen. I know one of the most significant God moments in my life, when I was a student, I was 20 years of age, or just coming up to 20, and I had been to a youth meeting on a Saturday night with Janice. We were dating at the time, and I sensed a God moment of God calling something or saying something. And when we talked about it, we began to realize the church that we were part of at that stage was a brand new church. It hadn't been going very long. But there was no youth work going on in it. And as two 19-year-olds training to be teachers, we thought we were probably ripe candidates to start a youth group in a church. And that night, I went home from that meeting, praying and saying, Lord, do you want us to offer to do something in our church? The next morning I woke up and it was the first thing leapt into my mind was you have to start a youth group in the church you belong to. Now the difficulty for me was that I was coming up to 20 and since the age of 8 I had been going 5 days a week to St Anne's Cathedral to sing in the choir. But couldn't do that and start a youth group. And I came down the stairs a bit terrified because my mother loved this and she was making breakfast because I had to get an early bus into Belfast for the Bible class before the choir practice, before the morning service. And I said to my mum, I think God wants me to leave the choir, hoping she wouldn't react badly. And she said, your dad and I have been praying about that for ages. Yeah, that you would want to come and be part of our church in Ballybean. I thought, wow, God's ahead of us, planning things for us. But when you sense a God moment, there's very often something needs to change. Something has to happen if we're going to live this out. For Mary, something had to happen. On to the next one. Also, some strange people and some strange gifts appeared in her life. The Magi turned up with those strange gifts. And Mary was blessed with a great gift. And I think I want this morning to pray later on that we would all be blessed with this gift. And it's the gift to not just remember things, but to interpret things. Can we stick the picture up, David? This is a painting by Holman Hunt. It's called The Shadow of Death. And you can imagine, this is Jesus, the young man, in the carpenter's shed. He's obviously been working, has reached his arms up to stretch. We're assuming that's his mother kneeling on the ground. And you can see, if you were up close to that, you can see by the twist of her head, she's spotted the shadow. Right, you see the shadow? And if you look very closely, you'll see that the hands are stretched up to a shelf that has nails and hammers and all sorts of implements. And now, this is Holman Hunt imagining something, right? There's nothing of this in the Bible. But you could see how she could see something there that was frightening. But almost more importantly, if you look at what Mary's doing, she has her left hand on something and her right hand is lifting a lid. And if you're able to see up close, you'll see that in that chest are the gifts of the Magi. These strange things of gold and frankincense and myrrh that mean something. And what we're being hinted at here by this photograph or this painting, and I think it's what Luke hints at, that Mary treasures these things. And does that mean occasionally she opens this chest and looks at these things and wonders, what are they? And what's going on? And that's what I'm inviting you to do this morning. Think about the God moments you've had in your life. Perhaps even God moments before you were aware of God. Think of the things that maybe you've had to change or haven't yet changed but have resisted changing, perhaps. But I'm inviting you to ask God, would you give me the ability to interpret, to read and see what you're trying to do in these things? I brought along this wee book to Adrian from Mommy and Daddy, 19th of April, 1971. That's my 14th birthday. I've kept that ever since because that's an incredibly important book in my life. And it took me 5 or 6 years to interpret why I had this book. It's a Greek New Testament. And at the age of 14, why on earth would my mum and dad give me a Greek New Testament? I'm guessing it isn't what most people get at 14. But as I interpreted it over the years, I began to realize, well, that's what I want to do with my life, is interpret that New Testament. And as we ponder on our own God moments, the things that have happened to us, I think we need to be asking God, would you speak to us again? Tell me why you brought me to this church. Tell me why I've loved that book that I read. Tell me why those people seem to be part of my life now that weren't before. What is it you're shaping and doing with me? Let's fire along a wee bit. What's the next one, David? Yeah. Mary also had to go through a bad experience. Years of it. Egypt was awful. Egypt is the antithesis of everything that is Israel. Egypt is where the Israelites were slaves. Egypt is where they were made to worship foreign gods. Egypt is where they were treated harshly for 400 years. Egypt was what they had to be delivered from in that whole Exodus story. Egypt is everything that you never want to have anything to do with. Mary has to go and live there. partly because it's the most dangerous place, but it's also the safest place when back in your home country, the king is trying to kill your child, because he won't be doing it in Egypt. She ends up in an incredibly difficult place. And sometimes the journey God takes us on. So let me change that. Every journey that God takes us on is going to have pain and difficulty in it. And we live in a wee world that tries to tell us that the highest experience of life is the avoidance of all things difficult. Avoiding all pain, avoiding everything you don't want to have anything to do with. But in actual fact, sometimes those difficult times, those valleys, are the places where we learn most and grow most. And Mary did all of that. She lived through all of that. And we're told that she treasured these things. How did she treasure the experience of being in Egypt? What did she learn from in that? What changed her life because of that? One last wee thought. If you jump way forwards, and we don't have no pictures of that, David, so don't jump anywhere. Luke chapter 23, verses 55 and 56. We're told the women who had come with Jesus from Galilee, which included Mary, followed Joseph, and that's not Joseph, her husband, followed Joseph and saw the tomb and how his body was laid in it. Then they went home and prepared spices and perfumes. But they rested on the Sabbath in obedience to the commandment. 33 years after that Christmas in Bethlehem, Mary is still on the journey. And I wonder, and again you have to imagine, when they saw Jesus crucified, and then Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea took the body down, because Joseph had a tomb, and they took the body there, and it says that the women, which included Mary, went to embalm the body and prepare it for its burial and everything else. I could imagine that at some point in the previous 3 years, Mary had opened that chest in the little shed out the back and had carried those things with her. And maybe they were being used at this very moment when Jesus has died. And I wonder, epiphany means light coming on or revelation. I wonder, did you think, now I understand why these strange things were given to me all those years ago. They have become the climax of the story. So I want you to start thinking about, what has my story been? The wee fifth footprint doesn't have any words beside it, because those words aren't written yet. I want you to be thinking about, as we journey into 2020 together as a congregation, there are some new things beginning to happen, like some stuff happening in our community, some of the things that Catherine's organising with regard to women out together, men out together, socialising, learning each other's names, stuff Chris has hinted at about learning names, about developing our cafe experience out the back here. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to be starting some house groups. An opportunity for some people to get together in people's homes, to be looking at stuff in the Bible, to be sharing our lives together, to be able to tell stories about being stuck in a yacht in a harbour, or whatever it is, and learning from one another and supporting each other. And I'm inviting you, as we walk into 2020, that we start to think, what words do we want to write beside that next footprint? What do we want 2020 to include in our story, our journey? Are there, maybe it's a repeat of some of those other things, but there is a blank beside the footprint of what are we going to journey into, and we can decide. Let me finish with one more little story. You got to go back a few centuries. Imagine you're in the middle of a city like Florence or Rome in Italy, and there's a great big plinth and a great big block of great big block of stone. And it's square, or it's rough. And there's a sculptor standing looking at it. And the crowds are gathering round, wondering, what's he going to do? And he starts to chip. Chipping away at this. But it's only wee chips coming out of it. But the next day, he's chipping away. Yeah? And not much happening. So the crowd, as the days go on, shrinks a bit because it looks like there's nothing happening. But as always in lots of these situations, children are much more inquisitive. And the children kept coming and watching. Kept coming and watching. And eventually, shapes started to appear in this great big block. Chipping away, day after day, day after day, week after week. It's taking forever. Till eventually one wee child sees what's appearing in the rock. It's a lion. Walks up to the sculptor and says, "Can I ask something?" The sculptor said, "Yes, of course." And the little child says, "How did you know the lion was in there?" And the sculptor said, "I couldn't see the lion in there with my eyes, but I saw the lion in there with my heart." Yeah? Something had spoken to him, and it was a spiritual experience. So there's something that God has hidden away, placed inside of us, that is yet to be sculpted and unfolded and put beside that footprint and the next footprint and the next footprint. And I think as we walk into this year, we want to begin to see what is hidden inside the stone that is yet to come out. Let's pray. Lord, we want to thank you for your choice of Mary. And we stand in amazement at how she interpreted and treasured and held on to the things that you were doing. I want to thank you for her great example to us. And we thank you for inviting us on that journey. And thank you that as we look forwards, we don't know where it goes, or what needs to change, or what needs to happen. But would you help us today to be open to the things of your Spirit, touching our lives, moving in us, shaping us, turning us into that wonderful sculpture that as yet we can't see, but we believe in it.
Thank you for listening. To hear previous weeks and for more information, go to beaverparish.co.uk/sermons.